welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to the guests in the first hour, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch and our good friend Andrew Gross from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. In case you missed any of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Also, a terrific patio. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day today in Winnipeg. Be sure to spend that day on the patio at the Cheer Bar and Grill. Gentlemen, there's been a lot of talk about Evander Kane and the contract that he supposedly may or may not sign with the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously, they're in negotiations, and there was some chatter that he was going to sign, or that he was interested in signing, a six-year contract extension with the Winnipeg Jets. My question to both of you is, given Evander Kane's skill set, the fact that he's only 20, 21 years old, why would Evander Kane sign a six-year contract that would cut into some of his UFA years?
Well, I think I'll let Richie get in here, too, because obviously Richie, back in January, wrote an excellent article evaluating Evander Kane's worth and with comparables and what the Jets would be looking for in terms of term and deal and all that.
Remus will tweet out that article on Illegal Curve on our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve, right now.
Drew, I think, obviously, from the Jets' perspective and from a fan perspective, it's obvious why you'd want Evander Kane to sign a six-year deal. He's the most talented player on the team. You lock him up, and it's clear. It's a little bit different. You know, Evander Kane is coming off a 30-goal season. You know, his entry-level deal is done. He's only played with one franchise. As far as Evander Kane and his agent goes, what he's looking for is a little bit different. And the obvious, you know, counter-argument to why he wouldn't want to sign anything above 2 or 3 years is that, exactly like you said, it's going to eat into his eligible years, his free agency years. But, you know, when you're offered that much money, and, you know, it's a pretty good deal when you're 21 years old to be making $5 million a year, you're going to be one of the highest paid forwards in the league, especially at that age. It'll be tough to turn down. I mean, Evander Kane, let's be honest, as far as the Jets go, I mean, they've shown that they want him here for 6 years. That's long term. So Evander Kane is going to be his team. If Evander Kane signs a 6 year deal, this is his team. He's going to get the top line minutes.
But regardless of all that, from a financial...
If you're Craig Oster, and that's Evander Kane's agent...
Thank you.
A Winnipegger, actually, works out of Ontario.
You're Newport Craig, Sports. Now.
Yeah, if you're Craig, that's with Don Meehan and company. If you're Craig Oster, why do you, you know, why would you have your client... on the basis that the CBA will stay the same in the sense that your eligibility for unrestricted free agency will be after 7 years accrued, which Kane will have after 4 years because he's already played three.
Right.
Or when you're 20, or when you're 27. Now, he's going to beat that. He's going to literally be a free UFA when he's 24, turning 25.
Obviously, the CBA and the question marks surrounding it factor in there. But, you know, you're right. If the guy's going to be a UFA in 4 years.
4 years. In the middle of his 20s, as probably a 40-goal scorer.
Right.
Why would you sign two UFA years away when contracts inevitably go up?
They're always inflationary.
Inflationary.
Doesn't matter what the new CBA is going to look like. 4 years down the road from now, mm-hmm. contracts will be worth a lot more.
And under that rationale, Richie, he might only want to sign a 2 or 3 year deal because he can get another contract and make even more money.
That's my question.
In his RFA years.
I mean, obviously, if the Jets offered a 6 year deal, clearly the Jets wanted out there that they offered a 6 year deal. That helps them, you know, media wise, it helps them. Right. Now, look at it numbers-wise. Okay, I wrote the article. I think I had him at, 16.3 for 4 years, I think it was. Remus can tell me exactly what it was. 16.3 for 4 years. Now, let's look at it from Kane's perspective, okay? So you get to that fourth year, you're done, and you hit the UFA market, and you're a 40-goal scorer in your mid-20s.
Get $8 million.
Minimum $7 million.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Minimum seven mil. Yeah.
So if you take what we're just talking about there, see, the way they offer it, they're apparently offering 6 years, 29 is the rumor?
That's Kane considering a 6 year, $29 million deal, which is just under $5 million a year, which means he'd be, assuming he's going to be a 40-goal scorer, and granted, we never know.
Never know.
But you would expect, obviously, barring injuries or anything else.
Security, well, he'll be a 40-goal scorer.
The Jets are arguing the security factor. Hey, here's the extra 2 years. But you could probably get 7. Maybe you get 8. Maybe you get 8 a year for 5 years. You sign a $40 million deal. Why would you take the offer on the table when you can have a max that you can have a bidding war?
Yeah.
Leverage-wise, negotiation-wise, unless he absolutely loves it here, and we have no reason to believe that he absolutely loves it here, why would you do that? So to me, if I'm Craig Oster, I'm thinking 4 years max.
4 years, $24 million or something like that.
That's too high.
Yep. Maybe too high.
You got leverage here, the Jets, because they got right. You got no arbitration this year.
Right.
You got arbitration the next three, but you have RFA. And you got to use a system to your advantage.
Sure.
You shouldn't be giving them that. Maybe you give them 5 at the end of the deal, but you don't need to give them much now.
But your point
is, leverage.
At most, you would think he wouldn't want to sign anything longer than a 4-year deal, because that takes him all the way through the remaining of his RFA years. And if he continues to progress as he has been, lines him up for a huge payday, either from the Jets or from another team altogether when this contract expires.
And as an agent, you serve the client. So what does Kane want? Does he want that ability to be a free agent in a couple of years? You want to give him the most money and make him happy as possible. So as much as, you know, you offer this deal and then you obviously put pressure on the Kane camp because you've put up the money, you know, put up or shut up kind of thing. Whenever you hear that, numbers like this pop out, if they are accurate, you know where they came from. The team. The team wants to put pressure on the player.
And I think this is really interesting, Richie, because we saw last year when the Thrashers came to Winnipeg, we saw Bogo and we saw Wheeler sign the 2-year contracts. And I think it's...
Those guys had something to prove.
Right. Okay, yeah, but I'm just saying that, you know, to use this as a basis, a somewhat of a basis for my argument, a poor basis, but a basis nonetheless. Kane's going to get signed for 2 to 6 years. It's going to be 2 to 6.
Well, no,
it's not going to be one.
But why would it be 6?
No, I don't think it's going to be 6. I think it's going to be 2 or 3. And I think if you look at 4 years, you have to look at it now from the Jets' perspective. Chevy and the Jets have offered him 6 years.
Yeah,
okay, he doesn't want 6 years.
But they also probably offered him less.
Right. So
they give they give the guy a range of offers.
Right.
But from Evander Kane's perspective, there's no reason to sign a 6-year deal.
And he won't. He's not going to.
Well, I would hope he wouldn't. That's why, you know, the fact he's considering, you know, I'm considering
a
lot of
things.
Well,
as a fan, you probably want him to.
I wouldn't say I hope he wouldn't. I think fans, me as, you know, stepping away from the radio show for a second, for Winnipeg Jets fans, I think you want Kane to sign long-term, but I don't think he's going to.
Sure, a $4.8 million cap hit for 6 years, of course you do.
That would be amazing for Jets fans and the city, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Now you look at Chevy.
I think what we're saying, you know, saying that they offered that is all good and fine and everything, but the fact,
the pressure is actually on the Jets here. I'll tell you why.
Why is that?
Because I know he has no arbitration eligibility. The pressure's on the Jets. Because you signed Olli Jokinen, and you signed Alex Bronikorovsky. So you're not really rebuilding this year.
No, you're going for it.
You're going for it in the scale of
you're
the playoffs.
A bottom playoff.
You're the playoffs, and you're not making the playoffs without him. So you need him. So pressure's on the Jets.
Look, we know, I don't think any of us think he's not going to be here come the start of the season. But the fact that, you know, the Jets, you know, that it's being floated out there, that it's reasonable to expect that the guy's going to sign a 6-year deal only worth $29 million, to me, is a bit of a fallacy.
Oh,
probably a lot of a fallacy.
Right.
You know, 4 years is more likely, and if it's...
Well, rationalize it, though. Obviously, if they offered the deal and he wanted it, he would have already accepted it.
Right. Well, and if you're buying out, you're not going to buy out his UFA years. His UFA years. For $4.8 million on an average annual value.
That's the average, though. So, I mean, you could scale it all the way up, Drew, so it's $6 million in the last year, maybe. But I'm saying he's leaving money on the table.
That's right. And why would he? What would be his incentive to leave money on the table, because you don't know what's going to happen 6 years down the road from now? If everything continues and he continues to progress as a player...
The point is, if you can be a 24, 25-year-old, 40-goal scorer in the prime of your career on the open market in a system where these owners beat each other up to pay more money, why would you not say, let's go, let's hear it?
You're an $8 million guy.
The best.
If you're 25 years old and you've got 40 goals under your belt.
I'm assuming he gets 40, but
And I mean, he's got 30 this year.
I would think he's going to be a 35 to 40 goal scorer for the next few years. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, why would you settle for anything like that when you're worth on an open market? You know, we just saw he's not going to get Shea Weber money. But could get Zach Parise
money. He'll get very well paid. The best bet right now for Jets fans, to be realistic, is Kane's going to get a 3 or 4 year deal. That's realistic. I mean, it just is. Evander Kane is an elite talent, and now with what's going on, it is a bit of a unique situation, and the pressure is on everybody. But 3 or 4 years is realistic for Kane. It's just the way it is right now.
If you're a Jets fan and you sign him for 4 years, you're happy, and then you hope that he likes it here, and you and everything
and,
can
absolutely. And if
we
he
talk
can still
about,
stay
we
here.
Talk about, you know, the idea that that's the CBS to stay the same. I don't see the players giving back any flexibility in terms of UFA status. I also clearly the Jets weren't too concerned about the possibility that the UFA years go up. Meaning you got to kind of read into that.
Right.
Meaning if you're Chipman and you're Chevy and you have a talk to the NHL. So if you were really convinced that the UFA years would go up, would you have signed Enstrom right away?
As in that Enstrom wouldn't become a UFA next season. It would be when he's 30 or something.
So you can read into it a bit in terms of all these things.
That's right.
I think Drew makes a really good point, though. Just quickly here, I know we want to go to break, but it's still possible that Evander Kane signs a 3 or 4 year deal and then is a pending UFA and the Jets decide to extend him. It's realistic. Just because he's not going to sign a 6 year deal shouldn't make Jets fans think that, okay, well, Evander Kane's only going to stay for 3 years. That doesn't mean anything. It's all about, in this day and age, and Richie knows this better than anybody, for Evander Kane and his agent Greg Oster, it's all about getting the maximum amount of money. I mean, this is a business, after all, when you're signing contracts. And when you're a guy like Evander Kane, I mean, he's one of the best young forwards in the NHL, period. And it's great that the Jets have him. But, you know, he's most likely going to be cautious and not sign a long-term deal. So he's going to sign a midterm deal, 3 or 4 years.
I agree with you wholeheartedly there. Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to talk about Shea Weber and him becoming a Nashville Predator for life. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by the good people at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Good and funny people at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Why did you look at me there?
Well, because you're not funny. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home.
I think Yezzy's funny.
But Dave Shore doesn't think Yezzy's funny.
Thanks, Richie.
For over 25 years, Rumors has been the Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night performing there. He's had a great week. Matt Falk is at Rumors tonight for the final night. Sellout crowds all week. Go check him out. He plays third in the, most recently placed second in the World Series of Comedy in Las Vegas. He's actually a local guy from Manitoba. Yeah, terrific, clean comedian. He's outstanding. I honestly, go check Matt Falk out at Rumors. Call them for tickets, 488-4520.
When's my boy Alonzo Bowden coming back?
He was just here about a month ago.
I want him to come back. He's the best.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Very funny on Twitter, too, by the way.
I didn't realize you followed him on Twitter.
I do, of course.
I didn't know that. I'm impressed.
I follow him. I unfollowed you, though.
I wouldn't
follow Richie. Yeah. I don't need to follow you. I don't need any of that.
No, you don't need to follow that.
Don't blame you at all. The Nashville Predators matched the offer sheet that the Philadelphia Flyers signed with Shea Weber. 14 years, $110 million.
Isn't that more than the value of the franchise?
Well, it's about it's about 25% of the value of the franchise, I think, on a per-year basis or something.
Yeah.
I think what the story was, he's going to get paid $26 million in the next calendar year by the Predators, and the franchise is only worth something like $140 million or something along those lines. So just under 20% there. Did the Predators have to match this to remain relevant?
Well, I want to step in here first because I'll give an uneducated answer, and then we'll let Richie give an educated answer. I don't think they'd had to stay relevant. I think to stay competitive. I think you're talking about two different things here. It's a good question, Drew, whether they'd had to sign him to stay relevant. But, I mean, you lost Ryan Suter for nothing. David Poile seriously played the wrong hand or whatever you want to call it, miscalculated what Suter was going to do. But with Shea Weber, if you lose Shea Weber, now you're rebuilding for years. You take Shea Weber off your roster. You've lost Suter. Now there's just two huge holes on your defense. You've built the entire team around Shea Weber and Ryan Suter, and obviously Pekka Rinne, and there's other players there, forwards. But really, you've built out your team from the back end. And in that sense, you had to keep him to stay competitive because you're still going for it. I mean, Kevin Allen of USA Today reported that the Predators might be interested in Shane Doan now. If you don't have Shea Weber, Shane Doan's not coming to Nashville. Obviously, there's a lot of other teams.
If you have Shea Weber, Shane Doan's not coming to Nashville.
Well, right. I'm just saying.
If you have Shea Weber, Ryan Suter, Pekka Rinne, and Alex Radulov, Shane Doan still isn't coming to Nashville.
The point was that they're still trying to win here. They're still going to go for the Stanley Cup. I mean, without Ryan Suter, I think their chances aren't very good. But the point being that when you have Shea Weber and Pekka, one of the best goalies, you're still Nashville's still a playoff team with Shea Weber. In my opinion, they're not a playoff team without Shea Weber.
It's always tough. You know, I've discounted the Predators before, and they've surprised me, so I don't do that anymore. I mean, obviously, they have some young talent on the back end. You know, guys like Ryan Ellis who can move the puck.
Yep.
They can bring up these young defensemen. They can have Weber as a stalwart. Yeah, Hal Gill kill penalties, do that kind of stuff. They have Pekka. They can play a defensive system, get some timely goals, and there you go. And they're back to where they were. Are they as good without Suter? No, they're not as good without Suter. Are they the worst team in the league? Absolutely not, though, that they're not the worst team in the league. But is it not the goal of a National Hockey League franchise to attempt to win the Stanley Cup? And if that's the goal, can you do that by paying Weber so much up front? And if you can't, then maybe you should have accepted the picks. But I think you're between a rock and a hard place here because you're not really a have not. And is that middle of the ground acceptable to your fan base? I mean, will the fan base accept 8th or 7th or 9th or 10th every year for the next 5 years if that's what you're going to, that's what's going to happen? And the one of the things about David Poile, I have a lot of respect for, but I frankly think he's a little bit overrated in the sense that he's made a lot of good moves. You know, he's kept that team.
He's made some bad moves.
Yeah, he's kept that team afloat. You know, they've drafted well, they've developed well, all those things.
Yep.
With that said, he has never drafted and done that well up front. And he's locked up guys like your Marty Erats and your David Legwans to contracts that are overpays as far as I'm concerned, and guys that are tweeners. They're not those top-end guys. So if you look at the four guys that he's paying the most money to on his team, Erat, Legwand, Fisher, and Gostad. Does anybody want any of those guys on their first line?
No.
No.
You probably don't even want them on a good team. They're probably not even on your second line.
I mean, Erat is a top six player. You know, you ideally want him on a second line wing spot. Fisher's offensively challenged. Legwand the same. Gostad, yeah, 100% not in your top six.
Right.
So, you know, and you obviously have guys after that, Hornquist and Kostitsyn, and they have to develop Colin Wilson. They have to develop, and that was a good contract, by the way.
They just signed Sergei Kostitsyn to a two-year, $6 million contract extension, and they signed Colin Wilson to a three-year, $6 million contract.
Trotz has got to let him go, because you got to let him go. It's enough.
Yep.
But he's never really developed it a forward. And he's never gotten fair compensation for his top players before their UFAs. And those have been his two weaknesses. And the 2 years he's decided to go for it, the Forsberg year, and they lost to San Jose in the first round, and this year when they lose to Phoenix in the second round. Didn't necessarily need to happen that way if he had structured his team in the proper manner. So I think that Poile has done a solid job. Paul Fenton, the group there, obviously Barry Trotz, has done a solid job. And they're above a B for sure. But to me, they don't get in the A grade because they just haven't done those right moves.
And, Richie, I'd have to agree. And we should also mention, too, that obviously Alexander Radulov blew up in their face. They were thinking he was going to come back last year, and then they would sign him, and he would be a top-line forward. So we should mention that. That's not happening. But you're right. Without a number one center in the Western Conference, and that's what they're lacking. You look at Andrei Kopitar, Dustin, like that's what they're lacking. They couldn't get out of the second round. We mentioned this previewing the playoffs last year. Guys like David Langwan and Mike Fisher, your top two line centers, they're going to have to elevate their game. Those guys, unfortunately, are 50-point players. Those guys are second-line centers at best. Those guys are veterans at this point in their career, too.
That's right.
So David Poile has to address that. You know, we mentioned Shane Doan, and most likely we'll get to that later in rapid fire, but it looks like Vancouver and L.A. are the front runners there. But adding a guy like Shane Doan isn't going to solve your problems. I mean, Nashville lacks primary and secondary scoring.
Exactly right. Yeah.
I think when Richie said, you know, Poile was between a rock and a hard place, that's what it was. I mean, how do you not re-sign Shea Weber when you've lost Ryan Suter for nothing? Even if you have to pay the guy a ridiculous amount of money, and Paul Holmgren and the Flyers offered, they made that contract, so it was going to be difficult.
He mismanaged it, though. He could have signed him last year, arguably. That's what we've heard as well.
Absolutely.
But he mismanaged the Suter situation.
Yep.
You know, you have to stop trusting these players. And no disrespect to Ryan Suter. I mean, he did what he was entitled to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have a guarantee, it's like the Enstrom thing. It's the exact same thing. If you don't have a guarantee this guy's going to be back, then you get rid of him.
That's
and
right.
I realize, you know, he's holding on to those guys until the end of the year. That's what he did with the Forsberg acquisition that year. You know, the UFAs, they brought in and they didn't do it and then they left.
We don't want to come
but
down.
You have to.
You know, sorry, Rich. We come down hard on the GMs, but really, I mean, well, Ryan Suter is, you could make the argument he Weber is, in my opinion, Weber's the best defenseman in the league. I would say Suter is in the top 5 to 7. He's up there.
I agree.
You can't lose those guys for nothing. You can't. No, it doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter what team are. You just can't do that. And what you've done is you've just set the franchise back 5 years. Because if you have Suter and Weber still, and then you still lack some forwards, you're still going to be a top five team in the West. Now
you can trade draft picks for those two forwards you need or younger players, and boom, you go for it.
Now
you can retain for a while.
It's going to be tough for Nashville to make the playoffs now.
Before we go to break, Weber signs this deal. And when you sign as an RFA, when you sign an offer sheet, you can't include a no-trade clause or a no-movement clause in it. Mm-hmm. He signs this deal. What do you make of his agent then going to the Predators afterwards and asking that they put in a no-trade clause or a no-movement clause? And
it's a lot of chutzpah.
It's a lot of chutzpah is right. For the record, the rule is if I sign an offer sheet and the team matches and both parties then after the fact agree to include a no-trade clause or a no-movement clause, they can do so. But how much chutzpah does it take, it take for the agent to go and ask that after you try and buy your way out of town?
There's absolutely no leverage for Weber now, so you say no.
And Drew, we've already told you.
I will retain the risk. I will continue to have the ability to trade you, especially considering there's a lot of money up front. If the team totally tanks and a guy gets injured and they make a trade, they might want to deal Weber for a huge package to Detroit or whatever it may be.
They can't trade Weber for one calendar year.
Yeah, 1 year.
One calendar year.
But remember,
he cannot be
he's
traded.
Due $26 million this year, but he's due a lot of money the year after and the year after and the year after.
So if you
want to save some cash and get a big haul, you might want to do it. You'll get more. Of course, the idea is if you hold on to him for a year and trade him, sure, you're paying money up front. At the same time, you're opening up your horizons to trading with every other team, not just Philly.
That's right. And he can't say no. He has to go wherever he has to go.
But Drew, again, you have nothing to worry about. Richie and I are on long-term deals, and we've already said we'll match any offer that by any other show on this station or any other station. If someone offers you a contract, we're matching that offer. Doesn't
I appreciate
matter.
That. That's very sweet of you. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most stressful, important decisions you will have to make in life. Don't leave that decision to an amateur. Use David Carr of Monopoly Realty. He will take the stress out of your real estate transaction. He's an expert and a professional through and through. Get in touch with David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Gentlemen, a number of signings, interesting signings this week in the NHL. First one I want to start with is the one that will affect Winnipeg Jets fans throughout the course of the year. The Carolina Hurricanes have improved even more with the signing of Alex Semin to a one-year, $7 million deal.
Boy, do they look good right now.
Did you think, is that too much money for what they to give to Semin for 1 year?
It's 1 year. We talk about that all the time. It's 1 year.
Back to our old adage, there's no such thing as a bad one-year contract.
1 year and a guy who can probably score 30 goals in his sleep if he's trying.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you're not paying him more than Eric Staal, right? That's the key here.
Yep.
You can't bring him in on a one-year deal and pay him more than the best player. Staal's at 8.25. Semin's at 7. It's fine. Okay? And the truth is you're paying him more than Jordan Staal, but not on a long-term deal. And Jordan Staal was still under contract for this year anyhow. So Alex Semin gives you some... I mean, this team right now, and you're a Jets fan, you don't like this because... In that division, you're playing this team six times a year now, and you look at this squad, and I like their young defense in terms of puck movers like Jamie McBain and
Justin Falk,
and those two good young defensemen, and you got Pickett obviously move the puck, and I don't like Corvo, but he can move the puck, and Gleason's a good solid guy. You got Cam Ward in the net, but you look at the top four guys that they have at forward, and they're dangerous, and they're Staal, and Semin now, and Skinner, and they're dangerous in different ways. You know, Eric Staal can take over games when he wants to, as Jets fans can attest to his performance this year in the game against Winnipeg. But Jordan Staal can beat you in all areas. He can play on the power play, he can play on the penalty kill, he can play at even strength. Semin is a sniper. Skinner is a great talent, but likes the puck on his stick, a little bit more of a stick handler. So Semin is a one-shot shooter kind of thing, and Skinner is a little bit more of the moves, and he dangles a bit. So what they're doing is not only do they have offensive pieces, but they have offensive pieces that beat you in different ways. And that's tough to play against. And I think if you're a team in that Southeast division, you have to be very concerned about the talent and the way that this team can beat you, and especially above all else. I mean, they have a creative coach as well, and then they have that goalie in the back end.
We know that Semin wasn't going to return to Washington.
Right.
Like, I mean, that was a foregone conclusion by the end of last season. But it doubly hurts the Capitals to, A, not only lose an asset for nothing, which we just spoke about last segment about how that's hard to do, and then, B, lose him to an interdivision rival where you know... granted, the question of motivation for Alex Semin is also there, but you would expect that he would be extra motivated to play against his former teammates in Washington.
I think so. Capitals and Hurricanes are going to play each other six times next year. You don't think when Alex Semin is getting ready to play the Capitals and he looks over at Ovechkin and Backstrom, his former line mates, all his other teammates, you don't think he's going to be pumped up? Absolutely. They're not going to want to play him. I think this is a great signing for Carolina. I think Jim Rutherford, you know, obviously he's made lots of good moves. They won the cup back in 06. Looking at up and down the Hurricanes roster, and last year, I thought that the Hurricanes would be closer to a playoff spot. Eric Staal didn't play well. Eric Staal is one of the best players in the NHL in the world. And at the beginning of last year, he was bothered by what happened with Mark Staal, the hit and all that. And then you remember towards the end of the season how well Eric Staal played in Winnipeg. The Jets were better against Carolina. They beat them, I believe, four times out of six last year. But this year, I mean, you throw in Jordan Staal up the middle, like Richie said, with Jeff Skinner is one of the best young players in the NHL. This team has not only have they improved, I think they're going to be one of the top four teams in the East next year. I think they're that good. And Cam Ward is a top five goalie. I mean, not only should the Jets be worried about this, the entire Eastern Conference, I mean, they've arguably made the best moves out of any team in the NHL this offseason.
I would agree with that statement. Are they are they your favorite to win the Southeast?
I still think I'd take Washington, but I mean, Carolina's either one or two.
A lot of that hinges, Drew, on how Adam Oates gets that group going.
In Washington,
I have to look into that question closer. I'll drop that prediction, I guess, later on in the year. But I do think that they're as dangerous as anybody.
Staying with the Southeast, the Florida Panthers avoided arbitration with Chris Versteeg, signing him to a four-year, $17.6 million deal.
Dale Tallon loves Chris Versteeg, obviously.
He had 23 goals last year, 54 points, both career highs.
Jets killer, too, last year.
Yeah, he was very good against the Winnipeg Jets last year. Is this a good move for the Florida Panthers, signing him to a long-term deal?
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, Drew. He can play a top-six role. 4.4 a year for a guy like that who can play in a top six role, and you're signing him, and he's got 4 years, and when some of your young players get into it, he's going to be near the end of his deal. They're not paying anybody too much money here, aside obviously from Brian Campbell. I thought this was a good deal for them. I thought they got fair value out of Versteeg for sure.
And you've got all those young guys coming up, Jonathan Huberdeau being probably the biggest guy.
They're arguably the best system in hockey.
Yeah, they're just absolutely loaded with prospects. So this was a good signing to me. I mean, you know, Chris Versteeg, that line, obviously, and, you know, Fleischman was good last year. They lost Samuelson, but he was all right. But Chris Versteeg was a huge part of that. Steven Weiss is still there. He deserved that contract. He was very good for them last year, consistent the whole year. He's already got a Stanley Cup. He's still in his mid-20s, so that takes him to, you know,
4-year deal, too. You're not, like, too much longer. And you know what? A guy like that, you can count him for 20 goals, and you can get him for 50 points, and a little bit more maybe with some more maturation. You know what you got when you're Tallon, right? You know Versteeg as well as anybody. You're the one who acquired him, kind of got him for cheap to begin with. So
when you look at all the moves that have been made by the Southeast Division clubs, the Hurricanes, the Lightning got better, the Panthers, you know, re-signing
Versteeg.
Jets
got better, too.
The Jets got better, you know, Washington, you know...
It's not the worst division
with some of their
anymore.
Moves. Yeah, that was my question. Is the Southeast no longer the weak sister in the NHL?
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. I'd say that, I mean, thinking about it off the top of my head here, you look at, you know, the division. I think Montreal bounces back, but does Ottawa keep up their pace? Where's Toronto sit? Boston, Buffalo? I mean, you could argue that this division's as strong as them. I know people would say Boston's the best, but you never know. I think Southeast would certainly have an argument against the Northeast.
Right.
And you look at in the Western Conference, you know, what's happened to a team like, has St. Louis gotten any better? No.
Nashville's got worse.
Nashville's got worse. What's
Central's
Columbus?
Not as strong as it once looked.
Detroit's got worse because of Lidstrom. And
Chicago
stood pat. So, you know, what are they? Now, see, Pacific looked pretty darn good last year. And so you look through the divisions, and then the Northwest, I mean, Edmonton's on the up and up. Calgary's gotten better. Whether that works out long term is a different story. Colorado, you don't really know. Minnesota's gotten better. You know, it's parity, Drew. I mean, you could probably make an argument for every division. Aside from, I think, the best division argument is probably between the Pacific and the Atlantic.
I would think
Atlantic.
I was going to say. I mean, you look at the teams in the Atlantic,
those two.
With the exception of the Islanders, I mean, you know, you could make an argument that those could be very well, I mean, you know, it can't happen based on the rules and everything. Think, but those could be the top four performing teams in the
year. The Devils have gotten worse. So, I mean, you look at L.A. obviously being the Stanley Cup champion. Yeah. You know, what is San Jose now? Phoenix always seems to do it. Dallas has gotten better.
Yeah.
So you could, this is a, it's an interesting argument and one you probably take calls on and talk about for 3 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Continuing on with signings this week, Jakub Voracek, in, he was an RFA in Philly, signs a four-year, $17 million deal.
Well, as soon as they knew they weren't getting Rick Nash, it was like, okay, yeah, didn't get Nash, signed Voracek. I mean, that was a no-brainer.
And Voracek, people are, oh, you know, let's look at what Kane could get. A different situation because he was a year past Kane. He had played 4 years in the league, so he had 3 years to UFA status. They're buying out UFA years there.
Right.
Voracek's an active guy. You wonder if he'll ever get to the 30-goal marker, but he's active. He can hit. He can skate. You know, put pressure on the other team. He can create with his passing ability. You know, he's going to be that. They're going to hope he's that 25-goal, 55-point guy, second-line right winger. I like Voracek. I've liked his game. No issue with that contract.
Yeah, he was good in the playoffs. I mean, the Philadelphia Flyers, it's funny. Everyone was talking about, well, what do the Flyers do now that they haven't got Shea Weber? You could make a strong argument Philadelphia is a favorite to win the Stanley Cup next year. Say whatever you want to say about how they played against the Devils in the playoffs, but, I mean, look at how they played in the first round against Pittsburgh is what I would say. That they were my Cup favorite.
Not beat the Rangers, though.
Is their defense of Timonen, Coburn, Mezeros, Shen, and Grossman, those top five, is that good enough to compete?
I still think they want a defenseman in there.
I mean, is that good enough to compete? Sure.
Is it good enough to be?
Is it going to have to be the favorite?
Yeah,
look a lot better with Shea Weber, but it's still pretty good.
Look at that! Look at all the teams in the East right now. They all got flaws. Yeah. The Rangers are probably your favorite now. And then you know,
well, the Rangers need to increase their defensive depth.
Right, but I mean, they're still your favorite right now. The Rangers on paper are the best team, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. They were the best team all. I mean, they won the Eastern.
And then you look at Philly. Well, Philly just beat Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, what do they get? Well, they have some good young players in the back end that are coming up, but they lost Staal and they replaced him with Sutter, who's a good player, but he's not as good as Staal.
Right.
Philly, what's Philly done? So
I mean, you still have the best group of forwards in the league.
You lose Jagr and you lose Carl. You've gotten worse, but maybe Brizgalov bounces back and. I mean, I think lots of these teams in New Jersey, a lot of these teams have gotten worse, Drew. And so I'm not so sure.
Well, and the only team that's gotten better is the Rangers, I would say.
Right. I think the good teams got worse and the bad teams got better. And that'll leave you with, I'm betting right now, probably 3rd to 10th spot will be a spread of like 6 or 7 points maximum.
Well, that's the parity that Gary Bettman has always wanted in the NHL. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment for this Saturday. Next week, we're going to take the long weekend off. A best of Illegal Curve Hockey Show next week. So you can catch up on all sorts of Jets conversations and interviews from the past little while. So that you can look forward to that next week.
Remus is putting that together. He's doing a bang-up job so far.
Exactly. So that'll be next week. We're going to enjoy the long weekend, but we'll be back with a fury 2 weeks from now with another live broadcast. I'm actually away that week, but you guys will be able to right the ship, I'm sure.
So if it's a best-of show, it just must be me and Richie's analysis.
Yeah, and then
you don't actually say a word, right, Drew?
Yeah. No, I don't actually say
it. And we get a three-week vacation from you, right? Because you're not here next week. No, well, three, really. We don't have to see you.
That's right.
Or contact you.
That's fine. You don't have to contact
me. So are you taking a vacation from your vacation?
No, I'm taking a vacation from spending any time with you guys. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire. We start with a guy we've actually spoke about earlier in the show in passing, Shane Doan. First of all, two-part question. One, do you believe the talk that if he leaves the Phoenix Coyotes, he's looking for a four-year, $30 million contract? And number two, where do you see Shane Doan ending up for this coming season? I'll start with Ezzy.
Well, save the best for last. I think that...
Or first.
No, I was trying to compliment you.
I'm trying to then compliment you.
Oh, okay. Throw it back. I like how that's done. If Shane
you're going to be an MC tonight.
If Shane Doan is asking for 4 years and $30 million, that's a lot of money for a 36-year-old guy who's probably only got maybe one or two really good years left in him. But I think that, you know, it's been reported that the LA Kings and Vancouver Canucks really want him. Mm-hmm. And there's probably half of teams, you know, apparently there have been upwards of half a dozen teams that have offered him a contract. But I have to think that it is going to be a West Coast team. Obviously, he's based in Phoenix, mm-hmm. which isn't really on the West Coast, but it's close to the West Coast. You'd have to think that, you know, L.A. is on that radar. But 4 years, $30 million. Obviously, Shane Doan is an excellent hockey player. He's had an excellent career with the Phoenix Winnipeg
franchise.
What's
the best fit? What do you think?
Well, a team like Vancouver obviously
yeah,
could,
I think
use,
Vancouver's the best fit.
Could use his veteran leadership and all that. I mean, he's exactly what they need.
I think he would change that
second line right winger.
And I think he would change that locker room in Vancouver.
And help. I mean, yeah, exactly. Second line right winger. Western Canadian boy.
Would you give him 4 years and $30 million?
No. What? 4 years and $30 million for Shane Doan? Of course his agent's asking for that. No team's going to give him that money. Are you nuts?
So you're going to now say that Shane Doan is going to get the same similar amount of money as Alexander Semin.
Look, I think it's absurd as well. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that anybody should do that, or they would actually be insane to do that, given that he's, you know, like you said, 35, 36 years old.
What
do you think he signs for?
I think a two-year, $10 million deal makes a little bit more sense than that.
Yeah, like somebody will probably give him 2 years, 12, or end up being like 3 years, 15. Not 4 years, 30. GMs, some of them are crazy, but not that crazy.
Claude Giroux recently had a pair of wrist surgeries this offseason, so he's got casts on both arms. Recently, he spoke to the Timmins Press about the surgeries, the scars, the wrists, and everything. He had the following quote. "Those are from Crosby," he says, half smiling, but with some tension in his voice. "Every time we'd line up against each other for a face-off during our playoff series, instead of going for the puck when it was dropped, he'd hack me across the wrists. I ended up playing the series against New Jersey with one of them fractured and had to go for surgery on both of them after we were out of the playoffs."
Go ahead.
Is Sidney Crosby underreported as a dirty player?
No, not really. I mean, a lot of players, these players are dirty. Mark Messier was like the dirtiest player ever, and, you know, he's renowned for being one of the best of all time. I mean, Gordie Howe was dirty. These guys are all dirty.
It's just hockey here.
It's within the lines.
It's part
of
the game.
And, yeah, I mean, do you like to see it all the time? No, but let's be honest. I mean, maybe his wrist hurt him in the second round. Obviously, he wasn't as productive. But in the first round, he outplayed Crosby.
Hold on. What about the fight that he had with Crosby in the first round?
They don't like each other.
How did that affect his wrist?
But he outplayed him.
I think that might have had more of a part to it. That was an unexpected little fight. The top two players on each team. But I don't think so. I think Sidney Crosby's definitely added an element of physicality.
Though.
Yeah, sure. He can be dirty.
You got to create space for yourself.
You got to create space for yourself. And obviously, in the first couple of years, he was not as nearly as physical as he is now.
Talk about the concussions. People go at Crosby and they've been going at his head, or they go at him. But Mark Messier didn't go at Mark Messier's head, and I'll tell you why. Because his stick
was up
by his head. So if you were going to go for his head, you were going to lose your head.
Yep.
That's what I actually think would help more than these concussion issues, would be to protect yourself. I mean, if you have to deck the guy to protect yourself, the guy knows he's going to get decked. It's not going to do it.
Well, remember what happened with Aaron Asham. Was it Couturier that came after Asham, or was it Braden Schenn? And I think it was Braden Schenn. We'll get Remus to check that. But in the first round, Pittsburgh versus Philly, remember Braden Schenn came right at Asham, and Asham stuck his stick up. So,
that's right.
I mean, that's what happens when you're more of a physical guy. But Crosby, he can do some dirty things, but I don't think you can say that he's any dirtier than anybody else in the NHL.
Moving to the world of fast food.
Oh, nice.
And hockey.
Whoa, that's, your expertise is getting
I'm
in
getting
here.
A little excited here. Combining my two favorite things, fast food and hockey.
We're going to Five Guys after the show?
Tim Thomas made another political statement on his Facebook page standing in support of the Chick-fil-A sandwich chain. Which
I thought it was Chick-fil-A.
No, it's not. It's Chick-fil-A, which put out a statement in support of the quote-unquote traditional definition of marriage. Is Tim Thomas becoming too poisonous to welcome back into any NHL locker room?
I mean, it depends on the save percentage, doesn't it? I mean, it does. He's going to give you 930, 940 save percentage. He'll go in any dressing room.
I thought we were going to talk about fast food, not Tim Thomas's save percentage.
I wonder what your consumption percentage is when you go to fast food restaurants. Do you think it's 930, 940?
Yeah.
No, I'm sure it's higher than that.
Like 94% of the menu. You know what? I think, unfortunately, I defended Tim Thomas twice on this show.
Mm-hmm.
When you also defended Andre Pavlik an hour after he got busted for a DUI.
Oh, okay, hold on. Okay, are you done running the bus over my feet?
Woo! Yeah.
Okay. So I defended him because I think he had the right to knock her to the White House and all that. But I think I'm starting to lose a little bit of respect for him. I'm questioning why he's defending Chick-fil-A. That I unfortunately, Tim, I think that you're taking this a little too far.
Tim Thomas, not our producer, Tim.
Exactly. We had Patrick Burke of the You Can Play Project. This is not a good message for when this group is trying to promote reducing the stigma of this.
I don't agree with him, but he's entitled to say what he wants to say. But the question really is, is he going to hurt himself for a contract? And I really do believe that at the end of the day, if he is that much better than the goaltender that a team has and they can get him on a 1 or 2 year deal, people will deal with it. Because if you think he's the only one with crazy views in the locker room, no, he's more vocal than other people.
Well, I agreed with you. Yeah. But if you're quiet about your crazy views, nobody knows that you have crazy
That's
views.
True. But maybe everybody in the locker room has your crazy views. The question is, do you have to answer questions for somebody else or because of somebody else on a consistent basis that it becomes a distraction?
And that's what the Bruins had to do last year.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
I'll start with the best, Ezra Ginsberg.
Richie's the best, let's be honest.
Nobody said that you're the best, though.
I'm not surprised.
No. How can
you're the best?
How can Drew be the best if you're the best?
Drew's the best and the worst.
I have two cheers, one hockey-related, one non-hockey-related. First, the hockey-related one. I'm going to cheer Chevy. I think that he did a very good job at signing Enstrom. He's a key piece of the future, and he's going to avoid a situation like Ryan Suter where he's going to be a pending UFA. And obviously, my non-hockey-related cheer is going to go to Aaron and Julie, who are getting married later today.
And you're emceeing their wedding, of
course. And I'm emceeing the wedding, so congrats to Aaron and Julie.
Yeah. Are you trying to get an invitation to Chevy's next family function there with that cheer?
Maybe.
Richie?
I'm going to jeer. This is all NHL teams, but a lot of the teams, including the Jets and amongst other teams, who don't reveal the terms of a contract after they've announced that the contract has been agreed to and signed. If a contract has been agreed to and signed, why not reveal how much you're paying the player? We're eventually going to find out anyways. Why is that a secret? Terms are not disclosed as per club policy. Why is it club policy not to reveal the terms? Doesn't make any sense.
No argument for me there. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer Roberto Luongo. For those of you who don't know, Roberto Luongo is on Twitter, but he's on Twitter under the username @strombone1. So he doesn't tweet as Roberto Luongo, but everybody knows it's him. Here is his tweet from about 48 hours ago. Hey, guys, remember 2 years ago in the Stanley Cup final when people thought I was the crazy goalie? Well, I still might be, but not the craziest one.
Great
which
tweet.
Is a comment about Tim Thomas, as we just mentioned. Great tweet, Roberto Luongo on Twitter, very funny. That's still going to be resolved sometime this summer. And, of course, we'll keep you up to date on everything that's going to happen there. Thanks to everybody for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning. Big thank you to our guests, Andrew Gross and Aaron Portsline. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, The Cheer Bar and Grill, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Remember to follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com for the best and latest news related to your Winnipeg Jets. Next Saturday, Best Of Show. Two Saturdays from now, we're back with another live program.
Well, one of our best of, because you won't be there.
Right, exactly. Thanks very much to everybody for listening. Remember, if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.